Next on The Balanced Word.
Everything we sell out for, everything we're pulled away to, ultimately is killing us. Slowly, a little at a time, it's affecting us, it's hurting us, no matter what it is.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hand, and the instrument I play, wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Seems like every time we turn on the TV or drive by a billboard or even look at what others have around us, there's a seductive call to get something more and not be satisfied with what we have. Whether it's the marriage we find ourselves in, the job God has called us to, or the home we're living in, it's important that we arrive at contentment. When we start looking somewhere else to find it, that's where we can get into trouble. Today on The Balanced Word, we'll learn a thing or two from Solomon's life as we continue through the Bible in stories. In Proverbs 5-7, we uncover a deadly temptation. Here's Pastor Dave Roth.
Everybody has something that they're drawn to. You might say, I don't care about work. I don't care about success. I don't care about money. I don't care about houses. What do you care about? Because I guarantee you, there are things in your life that are calling to you. And some of them might even sound really spiritual. God's called us together. God provided this job where they're killing me, but someday I'll be really important. Yeah, and then what? And then what's it going to do for you? And so we have to understand, and Solomon, who had it all, he had success, he had wealth. Later on, we find out, he goes, none of it mattered in the end. I traded away what was important for what wasn't. And so it's going to be smooth. It's going to be intentionally seductive. It may even sound like something that's spiritual. You know, maybe your vice, maybe what's tempting to you is gossiping. You know, there in chapter 6 where it says what God hates, it's amazing. He doesn't say anything about, you know, cheating on your spouse. He doesn't say anything about homosexuality. Look what he says God hates there in chapter 6 and verse 16. He said, these six things the Lord hates, yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, number one. A lying tongue, being dishonest. Hands that shed innocent blood, taking advantage of others. A heart that devises wicked plans. You're thinking about something stupid. Feet that are swift in running to evil. Going to the movies. I'm just kidding. A false witness who speaks lies. Wait, that was the first thing he hates. Yeah, it's the sixth one also. And finally, one who sows discord among brethren, somebody who's divisive. There are some people who, I mean, most of us are tempted at some time to, in a prideful way, talk about someone else. But we don't just talk about them. We say it's a prayer request. Oh, you need to pray for so-and-so. I saw him the other day coming out of a bar. You need to pray. You know what's going on in their life? You need to pray. Oh, yeah, you're so spiritual. Doing something that God hates more than some of the things that we attack all the time. The reason we attack certain sins is because those are the sins that we're not tempted to commit. That's why we think homosexuality is like the most awful thing in the world. See, I've never on my worst day desired to have a homosexual relationship. I'm not saying that makes me better than anyone else. I'm just saying that doesn't appeal to me. If I have a choice between being with the best looking man in the world or having a candy bar, that's easy. That's really easy. So then I decide, in a prideful way, the thing that God hates, I decide, that's really a bad sin. Now what I do, oh, that's not so bad. Because people who do what I do, I understand. People who do things I don't do, I'm grossed out. But here he lays this out. So we have to ask ourselves, okay, are we doing things that God hates, like being prideful? Almost everything we do wrong is designed to make us feel better about ourselves. It's because we feel a lack of significance. Everybody who gets in an illicit relationship, everyone who gets consumed with material things, everyone who is talking bad about others, it's all because I feel like I'm not significant and I want to matter. And so this seduction is a way for me to feel like I'm more important. I am successful. And we need to be aware of that. We all need to identify what are the areas that are where we're being sucked into and attracted to and pulled down, because every one of us is the same. We can't, you know, if you have been faithful to your spouse for 70 years and you're pretty proud of that, and you can't really understand how other people could do it. I mean, look, the goal in life is not to see how long you can stay miserably married, so that at the end of your life, you're like, well, boy, yeah, we ruined each other's lives. Proud of that. Like the couple that went to their lawyer, they'd been married for 70 years. They go to their lawyer and they said, we've had it. We're going to get a divorce. You're kidding. You've been married for 70 years. What happened? And they said, well, we've actually been miserable the whole time. And he goes, well, why get divorced now? And they said, well, we didn't want to get divorced until the kids died. So, but we all have something. We all have something that's pulling us away. And we have to understand that. We have to identify what it is. And then we have to realize everything we sell out for, everything we're pulled away to, ultimately is killing us. Slowly, a little at a time, it's affecting us. It's hurting us, no matter what it is. Now, in every case, the ultimate cause of this is a lack of contentment and a lack of joy. It's why he says there in chapter 5, enjoy your wife, you know, rejoice with the wife of your youth, drink from your own cistern and all that kind of stuff. It's like, it's not because it's like, this isn't some guarantee that like if you reach over and play with your wife every once in a while that you'll be fine, but it's the idea of appreciate what you have and learn to enjoy that. Learn to be content. It's the whole key to life, really. You will never be pleased with what you have. You'll never have enough to be happy until you find out that you already have enough to be happy. And you settle in and learn to enjoy what you have. Your spouse will never be perfect. And any of you who are married have probably learned this. Those of you who are divorced have learned it in spades, that you cannot change another person. So if you're hanging on thinking that eventually they're going to get better, no, they're just like you. They're just going to keep getting worse and thinking they're better. So at some point you just have to go, this is it. Now, I just want to say that this kind of a failure in marriage is bad and it's devastating, but there are a lot of things in life that are worse than this, like living in an abusive situation or abusing children. I mean, this isn't like a failure in marriage isn't the worst sin by far, but it's a perfect example of something that everyone struggles with, because everyone has to decide, am I going to find contentment where I am? Or am I going to look somewhere else to find contentment? And this is true. If you have to go to the store and buy something, you've got a problem. And what you buy will not satisfy you. Now, again, there's nothing wrong. I don't care if you have a house full of clothes. I don't care if you have the nicest car in the world, the biggest house on the planet. There's nothing wrong with any of those things. But what's wrong is if you look at what you have and go, it's just not enough. I'm just not content. Now, if you can learn to be content where you are, you will truly be a rich man or woman. And then if you choose to move, you choose to get something else, buy a different, it doesn't have that weight. It's not, you're not doing it in order to satisfy yourself. You're doing it because you can. There's nothing wrong with that. We don't need to all live in a tent somewhere. But it's the question of, are you satisfied? If you never get anything more than you have right now, Are you okay with that? Are you okay living where you are, having what you have, saying no to that siren, seductive call of every industry on the planet that's trying to make you feel like something else will satisfy you? If you can turn away from that and be satisfied where you are, and God provides and you can get more stuff, that's fine. But I really find personally that the more I downsize, the richer I feel, the better I feel. The one thing I know for sure, to continue to spend your way into contentment, that will never work. Never has, never will. And it's the same thing in relationships. If you think that your problem is the person that you're married to, and you just think, if I had married somebody else, you know, plenty of people have tried. And there are some people, and I thank God for his grace. I know some people that, wow, their second or third marriage is way better than their first one. So I'm not going to act like, no, you're just, you know, if you married a psychopath, you just need to stay. Now, you know, that's miserable. But at the same time, I know so many people who thought that the grass was greener on the other side of the hill, and it ends up, you know, I thought my wife was just a crazy, you know, something. And then I left her and I went with somebody else. You know what I figured out? Women are crazy. It wasn't her, it was half the planet. Men are crazy too, but you know. So women, you'll find that out as well. The whole point is, can you get to the point of contentment? Because if you can be satisfied where you are, guess what? You can be satisfied anywhere. You already have more than probably you deserve. You already have much more than probably at one time in your life you couldn't even imagine that you'd have what you have right now. So when is it going to be enough? Not that you'll never spend any money again, or not that you'll never find new friends, or not that maybe your marriage might not fail, but ultimately, to try to improve your life in order to make you content, that'll never happen. And the more you chase the seduction, the more you will find yourself dissatisfied. And at some point, where you are, you have to go, you know what? I want to learn to be satisfied right here, right now. Not to go back and untangle messes you've made in the past. Just to say, what if right now I decide I want to find a way to enjoy my life right now? That will inoculate you against that siren call of seduction that says, over here, this is it. This is going to, all you need is that. Stop now, and you will learn to be a wise person. Now, here he gives some advice about how to do that. He says, first of all, you need to listen to wisdom, and you need to think about it. You need to ponder the path of your feet. What that is sit here and think, okay, if I do this, what are the ramifications going to be? What will it do to my kids if I decide to leave the family and split it? What's that going to do? What's that going to do to my bank account? What's that going to do to my witness, to people I've shared about the Lord with? You know, what is that going to do? But not only that, hey, what's it going to do to my family if I'm at work all the time? What's it going to do to my family if I'm so busy that I can't, you know, check in with them? I mean, this is something, as we get older, we start to realize, gosh, I spend a lot of my energy doing things that today don't matter. And there were things that should have mattered, that did matter. And it's painful to see that and to go, how did I have my priorities so mixed up? But you can't do anything about the past, but you can do something about today and now. And to say, I want to think about the ramifications of my choices and what will happen if. What is it going to do for me in the long run if I have a lot more clothes? Well, what's a bigger house going to do if I can't really afford it? And it's like sapping my life away from me. And I'm like, yeah, great house, more to clean, more to, you know, now with this weather, you know, it's running your air conditioning is going to kill you. And it's like, what is the real cost to my attempts at finding satisfaction by stepping outside the bounds of what I already have and going to something else? It will cost, and we need to ponder that. And then as Solomon tells us too, and also, by the way, he says, Avoid stuff like that. Understand that there is an attraction. And so when you feel yourself weakening, like if you know, yeah, I just lust after houses. I know people who just do this constantly. And so anytime they go anywhere, they're like, well, I think I'll look at a little real estate. Pull up Trulia on my phone now and let's see what these houses are going for. And he would go, no, just don't even go there. If that's what's calling you, walk away. Don't do it. Decide that, you know what, I think we might live here forever. Instead of always like, wow, what would life be like in Kansas? You know, anybody here who's from Kansas, you know what life is like in Kansas. But people here think, oh, that'll be great. Because it's always a call. It's always a seduction. And so to just say, I'm going to avoid the temptation. You know, for me, I don't go into Krispy Kreme and just kind of reminisce. And think, man, those were the days when I could buy a dozen donuts because you only had to pay for 10 and they gave you 12. And I could eat them before I got home and put the box in the trash outside. Yeah, those were the good old days. Now, I stay out of Krispy Kreme because it does still. I haven't had a Krispy Kreme donut in years, but, oh, it's still calling me. It's still. If I just smell it, it just drives me nuts. You know, sometimes I accidentally smell grease cooking and it smells like a donut. There are places that you might need to go, or people's, you know, deaths that you might need to avoid, or decisions that you make about friendships and all sorts of things in life that you might figure a way to stay away from temptation. Don't put your head in the lion's mouth and then go, okay, God, it's up to you now. Please help him not to chomp down. Yeah, that's not wise. And so we need to apply these kinds of principles in our lives ultimately. Now, why does it happen? Why does it matter? Ultimately, everything that we chase to try to bring satisfaction to ourselves ultimately comes down to the thing that God hates first, pride. And I don't want to be too mean because I think we all struggle with pride. Another way of looking at pride is I want to matter. I want to feel significant. And the truth is, for most of us in life, we don't feel that significant. Other people may think we're significant. They may tell us that we're significant. But nobody can fill that desire that you have to be somebody and to really matter. No matter how successful you are, no matter how wonderful your life might be, no matter how wealthy you get, you will never, because of what you have, feel like, I really matter. Because the thing is, the older you get, the less you do matter. It just feels that way. Because, I mean, I know for me, it's like, I'm thinking, you know, whenever I die, and I don't have a death wish. I'm not afraid to die or anything. But at a funeral, I'm thinking, it'll be interesting to see how many people that care about me are still alive by the time I die. Because the older you get, you become kind of irrelevant. People start to go, so when are you going to hang it up? And when, you know, and so isn't it about time you slow down, step back? I'm like, yeah, I guess. But we all feel, I mean, this is something that women who have children and stay home with them or something, it's so hard because you're just there and you feel like, does this matter? Man, when you get older and you look at your kids and you realize, I don't have anything more valuable. But why did it feel like it didn't matter at those times that I should have treasured? But it's just the way we are. We feel like we don't matter. And so our response to feeling like we're insignificant is to try to do something that will give us significance, something that we can take pride in, something that other people will be impressed by. The cool thing is, the God who made you is totally impressed with you. In fact, he sent his son Jesus to die for you because he says you were worth it. And it actually pleased God when Jesus died because he loves you that much. Now, which new car are you going to get that's going to top that? Which relationship are you going to get in that's really going to improve on that? How many pairs of shoes do you need before you feel like, okay, finally I'm worth something? God gave his son to die for you. That's what you're worth. And when we understand that we matter to him, the pathway of that is a pathway of freedom. When we realize finally, I'm so blessed. If nothing ever changes in my life or if things deteriorate from here, I'm blessed. I have things that so many other people don't have, opportunities they've never had. I am just so overwhelmed by God's goodness to me because he loves me and he wants to be with me forever. I mean, that's pretty cool. That's pretty amazing. For some people, and I know maybe there are people here today who've never actually faced the reality of the fact that God wants to know you and he values you. And everybody else in the world that you've tried to impress, they're probably not that impressed. But even if they are, we're talking about God being impressed with you. If you just do one thing, if you just say, oh, okay, I will let you be my Savior, my Lord. I will receive that offer of grace that says, now, God is pleased with me because when he looks at me, he sees not my sin, he sees Jesus' righteousness. That is the single most important decision that you will ever make in your life. And it's the one decision you make that will not only actually give you significance eternally, but it will help you to realize that nothing else that's calling me matters that much. It just doesn't seem as important to me anymore. So if you've never made that decision and you've never accepted Jesus, I'd say today would be an awesome day to do that. After the service, there'll be people down here in front who would just love to pray with you and get you started. Finding out what real significance really is. Finding out what real freedom really feels like. If you haven't done that, then come down after the service. Start your life over.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Wrapping up our time in prayer, here again is Pastor Dave.
Lord, thank you for the good news that our search for significance can end victoriously the moment we submit to you. We're sorry for all the ways that we try to artificially get sucked into something that we think is going to end up mattering, and then it doesn't, and we feel trapped and gutted. We're all so prone to that, and you understand that, because Jesus was tempted in everything just as we are. Jesus had that pull. He felt that temptation. He was drawn in every way, but he never gave in to it. Then he ended up being the most significant person ever. So help us to walk in the contentment that comes when we understand who we are in you, who we are to you. And for people who don't yet know you, I pray that they would realize if they leave without getting right with you, they are giving up, they're passing by the greatest opportunity they've ever had. And we're not going to give a big sales pitch to it because that's not what you do. You just wait patiently and lovingly. And so by your Spirit, I pray that in their heart you would draw them to yourself. Let them start life over. And God, for all of us, help us to recognize the seduction when we see it, whatever it comes from. If it's coming from material things or houses, even if it's coming from family, if it's coming from money or power, if it's coming from our flesh, or God, whatever it is, I pray that we'll see it for what it is, and we will learn to be content and satisfied with what you've given us. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
As you look at your life, are there some fences that need mending or weeds that need to go? Next time on The Balanced Word, Pastor Dave Rolfe will show you what to do with those fences and weeds. The Balanced Word is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And yeah.